Hi, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Hadi, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life.
Very well done. Very well done. Yes.
We are here, and you might hear audio a little different than you normally do because we're, well, who cares? Basically, we're doing it over a telephone through the archive.
The graces of technology.
And the graces of Michael G. Haskins, who helps us out with this. So, my friends, the sound quality may be a little different today. So we had to sing, you are.
But, yes, not the quality of the program.
And not the quality of the singing.
The quality of the singing and the quality of the program are as wonderful as usual.
BMI. Yes, we're going to be talking about BMI today. BMI is bigger than you think.
Mm-hmm.
What could BMI stand for? Better make intelligence. BMI, the Bureau of Maternal Index. The BMI, whatever BMI is. So BMI stands for Body Mass Index.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing, a big deal. Swedish researchers just found that the thinner a man is in youth, this is from the Harvard Medical Letter, the thinner a man is in youth, the more likely he is to kill himself in adult life.
Mm-hmm. That's actually true for men and women, as shown by the Framingham study that was done on nurses at Beth Israel Hospital in Massachusetts, which showed the same correlation.
They counted suicides among more than a million men whose height and weight were measured at age 18 during a mandatory call-up for military conscription. At that time, the average body mass index, which is a standard measure of weight-to-height ratio, which we're going to teach you about today, was 21.8, which was on the low end of the normal group. Of the 1,300,000 men examined over a 30-year period from 1968 to 1999, 3,000 had committed suicide. The risk decreased steadily as the BMI increased.
Mm-hmm.
The fatter you got, the less chance it was that you're going to commit suicide.
Right.
On average, each 5-foot increase in the BMI was associated with a 15% lower risk of suicide. An obese man was only 85% as likely to kill himself as a thin man, a thin one was 17% more likely to commit suicide.
And this goes also hand in hand with cholesterol levels and triglycerides, which are usually the blood test, the ways to measure cholesterol and triglycerides in a blood test. The lower your cholesterol, the higher the incidence of suicides, and that's true for triglycerides as well.
Now, we could make a case for, here's one case we make for that if you're thinner and slighter as you're younger, right, thinner and slighter, usually correlates with people who live with a little more fear. You know, when you think about a small Finnish person, you say to yourself, they look scared. There's even an Enneagram. In the Enneagram, there's a type called type 6, which looks, you know, a lot like the Woody Allen type. Thin, kind of
wiry.
Wiry, right.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a higher correlation of fear with that group than any other group.
Well, there's actually well-known correlation between levels of stress and body weight, in the sense that for a lot of people, when a person is stressed out, the metabolism will go up, meaning that the person will consume more energy than when the person is not stressed out. Now, this makes sense in the great scheme of things, in the evolution of human life, because if there was very little food around, it makes sense that nature would pump you up, would give you more energy to get you to go look for food, so that it would put you in a temporary sympathetic mode, in a stress mode, so that you would get up off your behind and go look for food.
Which correlates with the fact that what the scientists found was that low levels of the neurotransmitter serotonin is what they found with the thinner weights.
Which,
so the smaller you were, the less serotonin, and we're going to get back to that a lot later, and they were linked to, low levels of serotonin is linked to impulsive aggression, and suicide is considered an impulsively aggressive act.
Mm-hmm.
Even though many people think of suicide as a passive kind of thing you do.
Well, yeah.
It's a very active thing you do.
It's a very aggressive thing.
You know, you have to kill yourself beyond your fear.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go beyond it.
Well, you have to go against the most basic and the strongest of all instinct, which is the survival instinct. So it takes a lot of energy to go against that, because it is supported by millions of years of evolution, not just in humans, but in all life on Earth. But I was just describing the sympathetic mode, Armand, because I think it's important for people to understand that that mode, it feels good while we are in it. And that's why sometimes you'll find that people tend to, when they discover it, that they can activate themselves with all that energy, they kind of try to stay there in the very thinness, in the very active thinness, because that's sympathetic activation, that's the stress mode, and it feels like a high in a very real sense, because even though the serotonin may be decreased, the serotonin levels, but the epinephrine, meaning the adrenaline, is increased. So the person feels literally as if they were on speed. And when that happens, what happens to the metabolic rate is an increase, and it goes from burning energy to burning the body itself.
So there is a great advantage to being thin. Thinness is a terrific thing. Thinness means generally you can find clothes easy enough to fit you. Thinness means that if you get in an airplane, you don't feel too crowded. Thinness means that you're a cheap date because you probably don't eat that much. Thinness is got a lot of good for you.
Life insurance gives you a better rate.
Better rate. Thinness is good for your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say. You can never be too thin. You know, we have
it's
people.
Fashionable.
The fashionable. The models are a size 2, size 0, and size minus, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next size down, whatever that is. A number of other things happen.
Size minus?
There's a size minus. I know there's a minus size.
A person who doesn't, it's so thin that doesn't exist.
They don't go to a zero, they go to minus 2.
there is a void.
Side.
Instead of
no,
a body,
no, no,
there is
not
a void.
Void. It's not a void.
It's an inside out person.
But you have to pay for it. So there are plenty of advantages and plenty of disadvantages. Today we're going to talk about thinness. When people talk about thinness, they usually talk about only two things. They talk about anorexia, they talk about bulimia, they talk about the problems that get people to be thin and so on and so forth. But nobody talks about the psychology of thinness. We talk about the psychology of overweight as compensation. But what about thinness? What
mm-hmm.
about it? It's a wonderful thing on one hand, and it's a not-so-wonderful thing.
It's a wonderful thing now in this time of history, in this parts of the world, Armand. I'm not sure that extreme thinness has ever been looked at as a positive thing anywhere else but in the past century in the affluent world, let's say. It's a fashionable thing, and maybe in a psychological sense it goes hand in hand with overconsumption, with overabundance, with the artificial abundance of our world. I was wondering if we could give that formula for the body mass index. What do you
BMI. Here
Very
you are,
simple.
My friends. Here's a formula for you. Write this down. Here's your own BMI, because if you check it out everywhere, you're going to find it in metrics.
Yeah, we're going to give it to you.
Metrics are confusing. We're going to give it to
in
you
the imperial system.
The imperial system is
good
the system
old
of
imperial.
Mathematics that we use.
Well, that
we
you guys use. I don't.
No, you in New Jersey, they use...
Us in Italy use meters and kilograms, but regardless, we're going to give it to you in inches and pounds.
Okay.
All right, so take your body weight in pounds.
Write that down on a piece of paper. Your body weight in pounds.
What is it, 130, 150, 175,
You can shave
200.
It. Nobody's watching. You can make it anything you want.
Right. So your body weight in pounds. Multiply that by 703. For that, if you need a calculator, it's not a difficult multiplication, but you take,
no.
If you weigh...
Give me 139 times 703 right now.
No, not right now, Armand. I need a couple of minutes.
You need a calculator.
You know, there are people who can do that.
I used to do long math. Sure, I could do that.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Wow, I'm impressed. I'm really impressed. So let's say you weigh 165, multiply that by 703. Then you take that number, which could be around, let's say, what, 90,000?
Right, and put it aside.
Approximately.
Put it aside right now.
And then you take your height in inches. What, if you're 5 feet 5 foot 5, you're 65 inches. If you are 6 feet, you're...
72 inches.
72 inches, okay. And you multiply that...
By itself.
By itself.
You square it.
So if you're 65 inches, you do 65 times 65. If you're 72, you do 72 times 72. Just multiply it by itself. And that might give you something in the 70,000 range, okay? Then you take the number you got before, the one of the weight times 703, and you divide it by the number you just got, which is the height times itself, and that's your BMI, body mass index. And the range is going to be anywhere between, if you're extremely thin, 17, to 35, 38 if you're overweight. Now, the normal range is between, let's say, 20 and 25. Let's be a little bit more generous. Let's say between 19 and 26.
It's up to you to be generous.
Well, I mean...
To say what's normal and what's normal.
Of course it is.
We'll stretch it.
I decided that today...
Right, somebody who wrote a book makes it between 24 and 25, somebody else, but Roberta's a giving person.
Because I don't go by such strict rules of what's normal and what's not.
But BMI, they sell a lot of things with body mass index, and body mass index is used in almost all the hospitals nowadays.
It's used everywhere. Because it's an indication of longevity, it's an indication of general health.
Don't they consider your gender also?
Well, sure.
I think a woman with a body mass index of 38 is different than a man with a body mass index
sure.
of 38.
Sure, to some extent, sure, because women are supposed to have slightly more fat than men, sure.
Okay, so your BMI, which you, again, we're going to repeat the formula to you, and I'm going to do it a simple way. Here it is, take the number of pounds times... 703. That's it. That's the number of your weight. So put a W times 703 and then draw a line underneath it. You're going to have your inches in height, your height in inches squared. And that will equal your BMI. And every one of you is going to come up with a BMI that's going to be either ideal, underneath, on top of. But you now know something about science that most people don't know. What's your BMI?
Hmm.
They give you little calculators to figure it out, but then they give it to you in metrics.
If you go online, you'll find calculators everywhere, and all you have to do is enter those two measures, your height and your weight, and you get the BMI very easily. But if you don't have a computer, we just gave you a way to do it, which is rather simple, and then you'll know.
Now, once you have your BMI, here's the idea. The idea is to try to figure out where you stand with this. Let's talk about low body fat versus low body mass.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference, Roberta?
Sure, of course, because muscle tissue weighs more than fat. So body mass does not necessarily equate fat. It can equate muscles. And so then you have a very different configuration.
That's body mass.
Right. Body mass means everything. Means your bones, your muscles, your fat, means all the tissues. But what's important is that through that formula that we just gave you, by some strange mathematical reason, what you end up getting is an idea of how much fat accumulation there is in your body. And that's really what this is looking for, how much fat there is. because we know that certain pathologies are, you know, linked with obesity and or being underweight.
So we're going to talk for a moment about this because, you know, anytime you hear the word fat going on air, people are going to be saying, cut it down, cut it back. I saw this remarkable program just the other day on television where they discovered, what did they discover? Cancer from the sun is not only due to exposure from the sun, but they figured this out and they said it also has to do with your diet.
So now they're telling us not to put sunscreen anymore?
No, they're just telling you, of all things, don't eat fats.
Mm.
And I know that gets you, Roberta.
Oh,
okay, let's get to this issue about the fats, okay? If you're an animal running around the Serengeti, do you want to have fats or do you want to not have fats? The better off you are, the more fats you have.
You don't want to accumulate fat because
right.
that would slow you down. But you do want to have certain kinds of fat that the body can convert easily into energy. So those you need in your diet, because the more of those you have, the faster you can be.
But, Roberta, I go down to the gym,
mm-hmm.
and I see people who say I'm down to 1% fat,
mm-hmm.
and they're proud of it. They have worked their muscles so much
uh-huh.
that they have no fat left at all.
You know what I believe that's about, Armand? I believe that's in a way, it's a psychological thing that has to do with, you know, all kinds of psychological issues I'm not going to get into. But it also has to do with an indoctrination on the part of the media, on the parts of the information agencies. We've been given for the past 30 years the wrong message about fat. We've been told that fat is bad, without any differentiation. And I think that people, the end result has been that what people have heard out of all this load of information is that fat should be avoided at all costs.
And we've been through that enough.
And
what we want to go to today is about the other side of it, the other extreme of it, okay? The other extreme of it has to do with thinness. And what we wanted to talk about today is why people who get thin get thinner. And why, when they get thinner, do they get even thinner than that? And what's the idea? And what's behind it? This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're talking about the psychology of thinness today. We're talking about the physiology of it, and we're talking about the psychology of it as well.
Well, Armand, for one thing, when people start to lose weight, it feels good.
It feels great.
Everyone feels good when they start to lose weight. Everyone feels more lucid, more energized, more attractive.
But let's talk about
more
from
sexy,
that from
more
that basis, from the basis of normal BMI
mm-hmm.
to the unnormal BMI.
To the BMI that's too low, on the
yes.
low end. Right. People who are extremely thin have certain advantages in our society, especially, that are very difficult to give up. Because when you're thin, for instance, the way people look at you, everybody envies you. Everybody envies a thin person.
Okay, but we're not talking about thinness, Roberta.
What are we talking about?
I'm talking about people who go beyond the BMI.
Right.
Because a thin person in a bathing suit does not look good.
But still,
when you get that low mass,
but still,
you're not looking good anymore.
For some reason, I think that when people get to be that thin, their belief is that they look great, because there is something that happens to a person who goes below a certain BMI. There's a certain kind of illusion that takes place that's been well known by nutritionists and psychologists, whereby the person doesn't see themselves realistically. They see themselves as a lot heavier than they actually are.
That's
this happens because of the endorphins, for instance, which are increased enormously when a person goes below normal BMI. When people lose a lot of weight and they become really, really thin, if you looked at their nervous system, you would find that there are a lot of endorphins in there, that there's an abnormal increase in endorphins. So that can cause a distorted self-perception, for instance, distorted perception of what the body feels like, what the body looks like, and whether the body is healthy or not. But one thing that happens is that women lose menstruation at that point.
So a number of things happen to a person when a person is losing weight, and they get to a certain point where they get a BMI that's under 18, 17, and starts flirting around those numbers. We showed you how to do that a little earlier. And what happens is the mind begins to change, is what we're saying. A chemistry begins to take over. Now, in two of the conditions, which are called eating disorders, both anorexia and bulimia, it's well documented that people have these distortions of thought about the fat on their body. But let's say this is not motivated by an eating disorder. Let's say it's not motivated. Let's say something else is going on.
Maybe it's
we
a way
want
to
look,
let
we want
go
to
of look. Of the feminine.
We want to look at what happened to the human mind when you get to a certain point, and you get to a certain point, and you begin to feel like you just can't gain weight anymore, and it starts to disappear. What happens to your mind? What goes on with your thinking? It happens the same way on the other side when you're gaining weight. You lose your mind over the control, you know, of the weight. So what we're looking at today is what is it that happens to a person in their thinness that stops them from being able to turn it around when they do? And we're not going to propose the answers yet. We're not going to propose that to you. We want to look at it. We want to examine it. We want to be able to say to you, look, there is this condition that's out there. Now, I know when we look at models on a runway, and we look at actresses, and we look at people who are very, very, very thin, especially the models on a runway, who are idealized and gorgeous, I know that they have so much tied into being that thin that they don't really care about the rest of it. They don't care about their mind. Their whole thing is about their image and how they look. How they look and how spectacular and how they get applauded and how they get celebrated and how they get imitated by their thinness, right? But if you were to use that also, Roberta, and to go back to something you said a little earlier, if you were to use that, we would say, okay, so what happens? Is this the ultimate woman? Is the ultimate woman the one who loses all this weight and is so thin? Well, you don't want to talk about womanness and estrogen. And I want to talk about what happens when your BMI, when your body mass index, gets to a point where it shows clearly you have gotten rid of almost all the fat on your body. Now, what happens? Now, Roberta, here's what I want to ask you. What happens to the estrogen? Where does the estrogen go? And what other effects does it have on the body to these beautiful models who are out there, who are walking the runways, who are idealized by everybody? Is that the ultimate woman?
Well, I think that's a subjective assessment. I can't say what the ultimate woman is, but I can say that estrogen levels decrease and testosterone levels increase with decreased body mass. And translating that into simple English is that a woman is less feminine the less fat she has in her body, and more masculine in the sense that the hormonal configuration changes from predominant estrogen to levels of estrogen that are so low that the woman doesn't even reach levels adequate enough to bring on a menstruation. So, you know, what could be said is that maybe what's fashionable, maybe the beauty that we're looking for is this androgynous beauty, where we look for women that are not that feminine, women that are more, I don't know, boy-like? I mean, when you take away...
Statuesque make work. Rather than do the interpretations yet,
when you take away the fat, what you take away is the shape. The very shape that the feminine body has is caused by estrogen. So determined by fat accumulation in certain spots.
So breasts are fat accumulation.
Breasts and hips and thighs
and buttocks are all
and
fat accumulation.
And abdomen, all of that. You know, belly dancing is the perfect kind of art that shows estrogenic beauty, because belly dancing puts into view, in an artistic way, exactly the spots in the human body that are shaped by estrogen. And so those are the spots where fat accumulates, because in motherhood, that fat is both necessary as a energy storage and reserve, as well as padding. So when you take away that fat, of course, you know, all of that aspect of the reproductive aspect of a woman's life is affected by the loss of fat, because that's what it's made of, basically.
So what's the beauty that's left? The beauty that's left is this carved, chiseled beauty, as if somebody had sculpted the person. And because it's sculpture, it doesn't jiggle. Do you know what I mean, Roberta?
Right.
Jiggle factor, when I say jiggle, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. The jiggle factor is a very big factor in nature. That which moves, that which bounces, it was called jiggle factor, wasn't it?
It was.
It
was called
It sounds like it should have had a better
jiggle
name.
Effect, yes.
The jiggle effect. The jiggle effect is when you have body fat, that part of your body jiggles. And what men are attracted to when finding a mate is to find that jiggle. That's why men like big breasts. That's why men are obsessed by buttocks and rear ends and all that stuff, because they're looking to see this thing bouncing. But when you take that away on a woman and on a man, you wind up with a kind of a stick figure. You wind up with something that looks like as if it was sculpted, as if it's almost lifelike, lifeless. You know, and it may have its beauty. It could be beautiful for that very, very reason. So then this brings us to our question. Our question is, I could understand why that would be in a society that is so conscious about the way it appears. I could see why people would make themselves that way. The question I have is, I can understand why people appreciate it, why people love to look at that kind of beauty, why men want to date that kind of a beauty so that other men will envy them for being with someone who looks like that. But what does it do? What mind does it take to make you want to give up all of your, well, I won't say anything else other than all your women hormones in replacement for other hormones? What happens? What happens?
Well,
and that's what we're going to address.
Can
when we get back from the break, we only have to take a short break. In a
are we
going to
sing again?
You know, we're going to have to sing our way out. No, I think we're going to leave that up to Michael, who will be taking over in just a minute. So when we come back, my friends, what we want to address is some of the hypotheses, or some of the thoughts, or some of the questions about why it is possible that some people make themselves thin to a point, or maintain a level of thinness that that they can't seem to do anything about. We'll be back. We're going to take a short break. And when we're back, we'll discuss it with you.
I'm sorry, you caught me by surprise.
This is Armand DeMille with you with Roberta Maria Atti. We are doing it a little different today. You'll hear a sound quality that's different because we're broadcasting. I have to do it actually by phone today. And this is because our other system is down, which will probably be up by tomorrow. We are talking about body mass index, and we're talking about thinness. We're talking about people who are thin and why they're thin. And I've got to tell you a story, Roberta. This is a really interesting thing. I knew a man who had a relationship, and it was a very serious relationship. It was a deep love relationship. And he was always on the thin side. This is a guy who was always on the thin side. But he had a way of controlling it. You know, he knew it was time to eat, time to take care of things. As soon as he broke up with this person he was seeing, he dropped about 10 pounds. And to him, that was a lot of weight. And he couldn't gain it back. It's almost as if some part of him didn't want to get back into the world. And I've seen this happen to a lot of women. Women who have relationships, who seem to drop weight after they lose the relationship to a point where they just don't want to feel it anymore. Now, I think about what you were saying a little earlier about a woman who loses a lot of weight. When they get to the thin side, they lose their estrogen. And in losing your estrogen, you become more touchy, more aggressive, more testosteronic. Now, I don't know if that's almost an insult to say, but you have less estrogen. Does that mean you have more estrogen?
More testosterone. I think, and I can only speak for my experience and observations, that when women are, I'm going to use the word estrogenic, meaning when they have a normal BMI, they're mostly women, meaning their mind, their psychology, their way of looking at the world, their way of relating to life is womanly, is female. But let's say that some kind of a conflict develops, as you said, the woman is in a relationship that's not working, or maybe, I don't know, maybe she has a conflict with her mother, or whatever, there's difficulties in being a woman for whatever reason. Well, what's the easiest way to deal with that but to drop the feminine self and to opt for a more masculine self, which actually, I have to say, in this day and age, it's a lot easier to navigate the world out there when you're more masculine. It's not easy for a woman to make it financially, to make it, you know, to compete. And so it's tempting to drop the estrogen, drop the fat, become more aggressive, more competitive, because it's a lot easier to survive in this kind of world. This is my observation. I may be wrong, but this is what I have. This is my conclusion in observing what women do. When you drop the weight, when you become really thin, for some reason you seem to be able, because women have cycles, women have moods, because of all this menstrual thing that changes one day after the other, it's not easy to be productive certain times of the month. Well, if you drop your estrogen, you become more like a man, that doesn't make any difference. Every day you're the same. You know what I mean, Armand? You don't have those ups and downs. But unfortunately, what that does is it sacrifices a great, well, I don't want to put a judgment on it.
So one of the ways, if you're not happy being a woman, one of the ways that you have out of it is you lose weight. And you get down to a certain thinness, and your chemistry will reverse.
Yes.
You can get rid of your estrogen. You can get rid of your period.
You don't feel like a woman anymore. You feel more neutral. You know, you don't. I'm not saying you feel like a man.
And from what I've seen, most of the very thin women that I've met are wiry and more aggressive. And they seem to be snappier.
I think that there is a hemisphere switch. I think that the hemispheres of the brain
actually
go from
Europe to America?
Something like that.
You mean parts of the brain?
Well, real hemispheres. I think you become more left brain, more goal-oriented, more into the doing than into the being. I think that the part of the beauty of being a woman is that women in their queenhood know how to be. They don't have to do. They can be, and just there is the glory of being that doesn't require doing anything, going anywhere, producing anything, accomplishing anything. It's just the beauty of being and being able to take life in the moment as it is without the need to accomplish anything. Male are not like that. They have to go do something. They have to accomplish. They have to prove something in order to feel. I mean, and I know that these sounds like stereotypes.
Great generalizations and stereotypes, but, you know, it's one of the observations that people refuse to state. It seems to be there, Roberta, you know?
I know that when I'm at the most happy with my female self, that's when I don't feel the urge to do anything, that I can just take life in and be myself. But when I switch into that doing mode, the going out, getting things done, that's more the masculine side. And, you know, and that's when I get thinner. And I think that happens to women, not just me.
One of the things I noticed now, to talk about men for a moment, I noticed something about men, too. Men who get thinner. Now, I'm not talking about men who build muscle. That's one thing. There's one muscle building. But men who lose weight progressively and get thinner and stay thin. They don't build muscle. They just stay thin. For them, I don't think they become more female, but they become more boy-like.
Yes.
They become more childlike.
Yes.
So if you see a thin, wiry man, he kind of looks boy-like. Mm-hmm. You know, they look boy-like. So now you have two groups of people. You have the woman who has taken away her womanness, and she's become, the question is, does she become masculine or does she become boy-like? And, you know, the truth of it is they both look like boys.
Mm-hmm.
The woman looks
androgynous, like I tend to call it, because I think boys do look androgynous, and I think that when you neutralize the female or the male, what you become is not like the other gender, but you become more like both, meaning like a neutral zone. You know what I mean, Armand?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's not that a woman becomes more like a male or a male more like a female. I think that they both become more androgynous, where they have an, it's like a neutral. It's like a place that's non-defined, that could be either or could be neither.
Roberta, you have you're a teacher, and I know you're a teacher, and I know you teach different approaches to dealing with illness and different approaches and perception of illness based on some of the latest information about, you know, illness itself and its motivation. In fact, I know, aren't you teaching at the Open Center coming up in July and August?
Starting tomorrow, actually.
Starting tomorrow?
Mm-hmm,
tomorrow. What is that, tomorrow's Thursday?
Tomorrow's Thursday the 6th, and I'm teaching a course 4 weeks.
And what is it about? It's about
health, immunity, and the nervous system, and the new biology.
But based on the new biology.
Based on the new biology, yes, which says that illness does not happen randomly, but it has a chartable, recognizable beginning, middle, and end, and that therefore we can understand it from a much clearer perspective than ever before.
One of the opinions you had that you said, which I think is related to your teaching, is that thinness is about a relationship to a woman's father.
Mm-hmm.
What do you talk about what you see there? I know you're not a psychologist. I know this is not your area, but you said something in there that triggered a lot of stuff that I've seen
mm-hmm.
over the years. So what's just your gut feeling about it?
Since I am a nutritionist and I have worked with a lot of people who suffer with anorexia and or bulimia, I have noticed that whenever there is the classical anorexic pathological behavior, underlying that behavior, there is a self-sacrificing daughter who says to her father, "I die instead of you. I am sacrificing myself so that you don't have to die." Now, this has been something that, in my observation, when that part is looked at and addressed, it seems to undo the spell, because women are not aware of this. It's so deeply subconscious or unconscious that they're not aware that this is what their unconscious is saying. But once it's brought up, it changes the dynamic, and it seems to give a new momentum to the self-healing, to the self-healing impetus. I don't know why some women have this desire to sacrifice themselves for their fathers. I'm not going to go into speculations, but I have found that it's very, very prevalent in our culture.
And I've seen something similar to that from a different perspective. What I've seen is two things. I'm going to start talk about women first. Women who tend to become very thin and stay very thin are saying the following: I don't want to be a woman. They're saying, I don't want to be a woman. And now you talk about the relationship to father. Generally, I have not found that women who are very thin are alienated from their fathers.
No, the contrary.
No, I think it's quite the contrary. I think they're bound to their fathers.
Contrary.
That's
what I'm saying. They're saying, I die instead of you.
Well, I'm not sure that it's
about
death.
Well, that's my words.
What I do see is, I will stop myself from being a female daddy so you don't have to keep me at a distance. You see, when girls are growing up, they get to a certain age, and as soon as they start rounding out, dad has to put them at a distance. And he does it because of his own fears of his own attractiveness and what he might do and what he might stimulate. So he pushes them away. So very often I find that a woman is unconsciously saying to herself, I want to be close to you. I want to be close to you. And the only way I could be close to you is to be
a
prepubescent
woman.
And I think a man is saying the same thing. I don't know how to get close to you. The only way I can get close to you is as a boy. And I think men are saying that to their mothers. I can't get close to you as a man because then it would look like incest.
Right.
So I'm going to make myself a boy so you'll take care of me.
Very, very true. In my observations, Armand, anytime there is a person with extreme thinness, there is a person who is looking to regain some kind of closeness that is only available to children, closeness to, you know, whomever. And yes, I have found that to be the case, but not just in the body. I mean, of course, in the mind, in the whole outlook of this individual.
But you know, in many ways, you don't see the child because they don't become that childlike since they get become wiry and aggressive. A very good friend of mine recently, someone who I really care about a great deal, said to me, look, I'm not an idiot. Don't talk to me like I'm an idiot. Well, I would never think of talking to them like they're an idiot. But this person is very thin and has been having trouble with it and suddenly turned on me and said, hey, what do you think? I would never think of them as not intelligent. I was just talking in my normal nurturing way. Here's something we have to figure out, and this thing may not be easy to figure out. But that kind of phrase, you know, about the kind of a sharpness, this kind of anger that comes out.
Well, I think, Armand, that when people see a person who is extremely thin, people tend to treat that person as if they were children. So maybe this friend of yours is used to feeling treated, you know, in a patronizing sort of way or a matronizing sort of way, and they're just reacting, tired of it now.
Right. And the chemistry will allow them. The chemistry will convert to allow them to be more aggressive in the world in that kind of a way. Aggressive in a way that makes you more aggressive, more productive. You know,
one
of the beauties about being very thin is you're a very cheap date. You know what I mean? I mean, somebody could buy you dinner and they'll eat very little.
Right.
It's very good.
Right.
Your food bills are very smaller.
Definitely.
Much smaller. Clothing bills are probably cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Laundry is probably.
Definitely. There's a lot of savings.
In your laundry.
Well, yes, there are a lot of advantages and disadvantages, but I think what we're saying today is that extreme thinness, unfortunately, can result from following the suggestions that tell us that fat is bad, and we're just saying, you know, it's not all bad, and it's not all good to be extremely thin.
Or extremely fat.
Both extremes, right. Both extremes seem to have, advantages and disadvantages.
Based on your BMI, and if those of you just tuned in who are not able to get the BMI index as given out by Armand DeMille and Roberta Maria Atti, one of these rare things that you find here on WBAI, we're going to give it to you once again. Your body mass index, you could write this down. This is your body weight times the number 703.
703.
703, right, 703. Your body weight, your current body weight times 703, divided by your height in inches squared. That means times itself. And that'll give you a body mass index somewhere between 18 and 35. And somewhere in there, you know that they claim that 19 to 25, 26 is what they consider ideal range. Everything above it starts getting less ideal. Everything below it starts getting less ideal. Today we were looking at the lower BMIs based on some of the new research by the Harvard Medical School.
Armand, there's something about fat that I want to say that very few people know. And when I learned it myself, I was kind of, the implications are really interesting. Fat is the only category of nutrients that goes to your tissues undigested, meaning that whatever kind of fat you eat doesn't get broken down like, let's say, protein or carbohydrates. The same kind of fat that you eat is what goes into your tissues. So if it is fat that comes from olives, that's the fat that goes into your tissues. If it is fat that comes from chicken, from whatever. And I think it's interesting because depending on the kind of fat that you eat the most of, you're going to have a different skin texture and, you know, all different kinds of skin qualities. Because, of course, fat is the one thing that skin is made of, and it's the most visible through the skin.
That's interesting. So you're saying people who eat a lot of olive oil are going to have an oily skin, skin, rather than those who eat steaks are going to look like steers.
I'm saying
they're
exactly
going to look like leather.
That the olive look of the Mediterranean people is precisely because a lot of the fat that these people eat is olive. That is exactly what I'm saying. And if you look at different people around the world, the quality, and I'm not talking about the color, I'm talking about the quality of the skin, reflects the kind of fat contained in that population's diet. Because fat goes to the tissues practically undigested. It gets emulsified, meaning that it gets broken down into absorbable droplets, but it doesn't change its constitution at all. I think that's a fascinating bit of information.
Yes, it is. And back to thinness, what we're talking about today. So here comes another correlation that we found, right? We found that once this component of I am rejecting myself as a woman and I'm not aware of it and I can't see what I'm doing and therefore I am progressively losing weight and find myself not able to gain weight. Well, you know, there's a problem with that, because when you go out into the world, into this world with that problem, people laugh at you. People say to you, you know, sure, I should be like you. I wish I were as thin as you, because most people struggle with the opposite weight problem. So we don't pay enough attention to the plight of the people who feel that they're at war with themselves. You know, they can't control it. And what we're finding is, I think what needs to be done is some look at the psychology of it, not so much from the place of the eating disorder, because it's not an eating disorder. It's a being disorder. It's a thing about how I see myself. Do I want to be female? Do I want to be adult? How do I want to be? And somehow something unconsciously is saying to you, you know, let's give it up. You've had enough love for this time around. No more relationships. Kind of slide out of relationships. Kind of slide out of, you get more aggressive. You do more things. You could live a more masculine life. So maybe that's one side, but I think we as psychologists need to pay more attention to the needs of the people who feel like they have, believe it or not, a disorder or something wrong with them that they can't talk about. They just can't talk about. There's no one around. Everybody is willing to talk to you about weight. You're overweight, boy, you go rushing somewhere and they'll say to you, you know, we'll give you, put you on this program, we'll take you on this program, we'll give you weight pills, we'll give you Hoodia, we'll give you whatever we give you. We could deal with weight problems. But do people ever go to you and say, I don't know what it is and it's my mind that's stopping me? And is there anybody to listen besides Roberta Mariotti? You know what I mean? You know, Roberta, do people come to you with feeling too thin? Do they actually come to you with that problem?
Rarely, very rarely. And they have difficulties admitting it even. It's difficult to admit because they almost feel guilty to be complaining about something that most people would give, you know, most people, I mean, look at liposuction, look at gastric, bypass. I mean, people go through such horrors to lose weight that it's almost shameful to admit that one cannot put on weight. So it's difficult even to admit it, let alone to seek help. But I do think that it's actually a very legitimate condition where a person might benefit from, especially from support, from ongoing support.
Emotional support.
Definitely.
More than drink a malt a day.
That doesn't help.
Solutions aren't going to help you. Take these nutrients, take these vitamins.
No, because when the brain is set to a certain metabolism that doesn't allow for weight gain, no matter what you eat is going to just be dropped off and let go of. There's nothing you can do. It's something that needs to change in the brain and nervous system before a person can begin to put on weight. It's not in the diet.
It's an interesting thing. You observed a long time ago, Roberta, that a person who is overweight is starving.
Yes.
I always thought, Jesus, that doesn't look like a starving person. But
it's a form of starvation, sure.
That weight, overweight is a form of starvation, and by that you mean?
By that I mean that at the cellular level, cellular membranes do not take in nutrients, do not allow the needed nutrients to come into the cell where they can be utilized. So the nutrients may accumulate, the fat may accumulate, but that does not mean that the body is getting what it needs. It's just accumulation of useless excess. So the body is actually often starved for what it really needs.
And so overweight or compulsive eating is often a sign of starvation.
Yes.
And it's not what you see. And when someone comes to you who's saying to you, I eat, I try to put on weight, but they're starving also.
Yes, what I look at is why is this brain not allowing this person's digestive system to do its job? Why is the brain preventing these nutrients from being absorbed and utilized? Why? What's going on in the person's life? What kind of stress? What kind of thought pattern? What kind of mindset? What has happened? Like you said, Armand, often a failed relationship or a relationship, I don't think there is such a thing, but a relationship that we perceived we have failed at could be the beginning of a downward spiral whereby a person loses weight more and more until they disappear. So that's what I look for, much more so than giving a diet that really doesn't, if the body is not able to absorb nutrients, the diet can only help so much.
Well, that's what makes you unique, Roberta Maria Atti. It makes you unique because when you look at people, and you're a nutritionist who looks at people, and as you listen to all the others who are talking, you listen to all the other nutritionists, you always hear them talking about, actual physical interventions that are immediate, that are indicated by whatever is missing.
As if there was no mind.
As if there was no mind.
In the machine.
That's well done.
Thank you.
Roberta Maria Atti, a reminder at the Open Center starting tomorrow. You call the Open Center, you'll find out about her course.
Yep.
I'm very
excited about it because I haven't taught there in a few years, and I used to be there a lot, and so it's nice to be back at the Open Center.
We'll be back with you tomorrow with the Positive Mind. You may be able to download today's program at thepositivemind.com. Take a look at the website or you send me an email, armand@brainlink, brainlink.com. Back with you tomorrow, my friend.
Can I give out my site?
1 o'clock in Roberta's website.
CreativeHealthSolutions.org.
See you tomorrow, my friends.